Welcome to the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. All right, telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. This show is generally simulcast, and it will be once again starting in hour number three. If you're wondering, you have your phone number. You know to hit me up on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Jim Rome. Busy show today. We went open phones in hour one. I've got the president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets, Tim Connolly, coming up next segment. We added Ross Tucker. He will be in the last segment of the program. That's coming up at the end of hour number three. But as promised, Championship Monday, we are joined by college basketball's hungriest insider for CBS Sports, host of the College Hoops Today podcast for Compass Media. He is John Rothstein. John, good to have you back. How are you?
Never better, Jim. Championship Monday.
Can't beat that. Now, John, you've had a day and a half to think about it, so let me get you to go back to Saturday night. When you think about that final sequence of the UCLA-Gonzaga game with UCLA scoring to tie it and then Jalen Suggs winning it, what are your thoughts?
A moment for this generation like you and I had when Christian Laettner made that shot for Duke to beat Kentucky in 1992, but the big difference is this. When you think about what happened in that Duke-Kentucky game, that was a one against a two seed. This is a one against an 11 seed when a situation occurred where UCLA didn't have three of its projected starters for the duration of the season. Dacian Nix obviously did not play to start the year because he went to the G League. And then Chris Smith tore his ACL in December. And then Jalen Hill left UCLA for personal reasons in the middle of the year. So there wasn't a time at all this season where UCLA was playing with its projected starting lineup that Mick Cronin looked at when he was constructing this team for his second year. That is a big thing to keep in mind when you're evaluating, obviously, just the magnitude of what UCLA did.
John Rothstein joining us. So when you evaluate the magnitude of what they did and the game itself, have you ever seen a better Final Four game?
I don't know if I've seen a better Final Four game, but I will say this. The way that UCLA was able to trade wits with Gonzaga was nothing sort of sensational. I mean, I think one thing you look at when you have great games is you have lead changes. You have the ability to go from minute to minute without really knowing what's going to happen. And that's really what we saw in that basketball game. UCLA was sensational offensively. But the one thing we also saw from the Bruins, Jim, and they kind of told me this when I visited with the Bruins staff late Saturday night and also Sunday morning, is that UCLA, like a lot of teams, had issues stopping Gonzaga. And that, to me, is the biggest thing for Baylor. Baylor not only needs to trade baskets with the Bulldogs tonight, they have to find a way to stop Gonzaga from getting layups and also converting at a high level. Gonzaga is in a situation right now where I think they're the best cutting team I've ever seen. No team gets layups like the Bulldogs.
We were talking to John Rothstein. All right, John, so what about Gonzaga? When you're looking at them coming out of Saturday night, do you view that as a situation where they were tested?
UCLA, and we have to obviously give them a tip of the cap for the job that Mick Cronin did. But I think, you know, you look at Gonzaga, Jim, and here's the thing that I took away after Saturday night. You know, I think that it's fair, obviously, if they win tonight, that they have to join the conversation among the best teams that have ever played college basketball. That's obviously all well and good. But I have also seen teams that have had a couple of losses and win the national championship be more dominant than Gonzaga has up until the UCLA game. And what I mean by that is there are teams like the 2018 Villanova team. There are teams like, obviously, the 2009 North Carolina team. Or even in certain instances, you could say, like in the 1990 UNLV team, that have been more dominant through an NCAA tournament but didn't go undefeated. Gonzaga was taken to the brink. And remember, UCLA had an opportunity to win the game at the end of regulation with Johnny Juzang having an opportunity to get a layup. They called, obviously, an offensive foul. But, you know, for those great teams, even going back 3 years ago, with Villanova, we saw them really rip through the NCAA tournament like a chainsaw through butter. You won't be able to say that even if Gonzaga wins the game tonight.
John Rothstein helping us get ready for Championship Monday, Baylor and Gonzaga. So what about Baylor, John? They put on an absolute clinic against Houston. What was the most impressive part of their performance against the Cougars? And then secondly, what makes this Baylor team so dangerous right now?
Well, the way that they can get after, you know, I think, you know, teams defensively, and if they were a snake right now, Davion Mitchell would be the head. And I think, you know, the one thing you need to look at is Baylor doesn't just have the best defender in Davion Mitchell in college basketball. They also have guys like Mark Vital, who's one of the top five defenders in college basketball. And Jim, here's another thing. The most underrated thing about Baylor is its depth, because for all intents and purposes, I look at the Bears and I see them as a team that has eight starters when you consider the fact that they bring Adam Flagler, Matthew Meyer, and Jonathan Chamwachasua off the bench. Those three players combined for 30 points and 13 rebounds on Saturday against Houston. And you think about it, those guys would be good enough to start for 95% of the teams in college basketball. For all intents and purposes right now, you are looking at a situation where Baylor has a decisive advantage on the bench against Gonzaga. The Zags, Tutsop Thugs, Anton Watson, and Aaron Cook, you can tell, are just that substitute. Baylor has eight starters.
I agree, John. I love their depth. I love their bench. John Rothstein joining us. You know, John, obviously, when you look at Gonzaga, it's always all about how do we keep them from getting out in transition. UCLA did its very best. I mean, they did a pretty good job, and still, they put up points against the Bruins. So if Baylor had its way, what is the pace that they would like to see tonight?
I think anything in the low to mid 70s, because, you know, there's the thing. Gonzaga is a team that, again, is so effortless offensively. You can play good defense against them, and they can still get 75, 80 points without really breaking a sweat. That's how good they are offensively. They had a 45-44 lead against UCLA at the half on Saturday night. And I said to people, this is way too many points for UCLA. If the score at halftime is under 40, I think Baylor has a legitimate chance to win the game. If it's plus 40, I'm going with the Zags.
All right, so what is the key for Gonzaga this evening?
Pace, tempo, and also defense. And what I mean by that is Baylor, as we saw, Jim, in the Sweet 16, was able to win in the mud against Villanova and not play its best obvious offensive game. That completely shifted against Houston because of how well Baylor shoots the basketball. And not only that, they had 23 assists on 29 main field goals against the Cougar. That's illegal in 48 states, Jim. Baylor will not only have to be a stout at stopping Gonzaga from getting layups and easy baskets, they also have to do what UCLA did, make shots with regularity and put pressure on Gonzaga to keep answering them.
So from the sounds of things, John, you sound like kind of what I said earlier today. I said I can make a really good argument for both these teams. Bottom line, who do you like tonight?
I'm going to take Gonzaga just based on what I'm looking at from an offensive perspective, just because I don't know. I don't have the confidence in that Baylor is going to be able to trade baskets. And I think Gonzaga's offense will just be too much.
All right, John, before you go, really quickly, the other big story in college basketball over the past few days has been the retirement of Roy Williams. What is your sense as to where things stand with the UNC head coaching search? And is there any doubt in your mind that they keep that in the family?
No doubt in my mind that they keep it in the family. I know that Bubba Cunningham, the athletic director from North Carolina, has been in a situation where he's been reaching out to North Carolina alumni over the last couple of days to gauge their interest on what they think the program should do moving forward. For me, from everything I've gathered, assistant coach Hubert Davis and also UNC Greensboro head coach Wes Miller are the two names at the top of the list. Would be shocked if North Carolina does not name a head coach this week, Jim.
Then, John, quickly, what about Porter Moser going to take over as the head coach at Oklahoma? He's had a lot of opportunities in the past to leave Loyola. What do you make of that fit for him?
Well, I think, you know, you look at Porter Moser, Jim, and he's had opportunities to leave Loyola Chicago before. Could have had UNLV, could have had St. John's. At Oklahoma, he gets the type of power conference job he desired. Great resources, a great athletic director in Joe Castiglione, and he also gets to have a relationship with Lon Kruger, use him as a resource, a guy who's a legend in our profession. And look, I know Porter Moser had a very, very difficult time when he was obviously thinking about leaving Chicago, because he loves, obviously, his life in the Windy City. He loves the access he has, the great games at Wrigley Field. But, you know, if I ever talk to him in the next couple of weeks, Jim, I'm just going to tell him, like, look, man, it's not Santa Barbara.
Nothing is, John. You know this. Nothing is. Finally, what about, and I'll tell you something else that's not Santa Barbara, but pretty damn cool, Austin. Chris Beard, officially the new head coach at Texas. How do you like that move for him?
Well, think about this. Chris Beard took Texas Tech from obscurity to being in a situation where they went to the Elite Eight in 2018, lost to the eventual national champion, Villanova. The next year, they're one defensive stop away from winning a national title at Texas Tech. You put him in Austin with the resources, with the brand that Texas is. I don't think there's any doubt that Texas will be a top 10 to 12 team every year that Chris Beard is the head coach. That is a marriage that is destined for success, much like just the right amount of soft serve from McConnell's ice cream.
My man, John Rothstein, college basketball insider for CBS Sports, host of the College Hoops podcast, Today podcast for Compass Media. And it's a big one tonight. John, great job as always. Next time you're in the 805, you let me know. I'll come find you.
Thanks. You got it, Jim. Talk soon, man.
Have a great day, John. Good job. Thanks so much. John Rothstein joining us. He understands how awesome Santa Barbara is. Of course, anybody who's been there would understand that. All right, so quickly, your thoughts. He's got Gonzaga tonight on the premise that as good as Baylor is, it's going to be tough for them to trade baskets with Gonzaga. I agree, and I could also make the argument for Baylor. Nobody shoots a three ball better. They're playing lights-out defense. Got the incredible backcourt with the three-headed monster. They go eight deep, great bench, great coach, and they are on one. Dear Jimmy, I've been to turkeys before, and hams, and salamis, and roast beefs, and pepperonis. Regards, Charlie Weiss, Chris in Milwaukee. Jimmy, I don't see what all the fuss is about regarding Paul Pierce's video. Looks like a normal Friday night to me. Signed, Tan Smack. Back then, yes. In 2021, no. Back when I was on that hog, and I had one lady behind me and one on my lap, and my beautiful, glorious mullet was flapping in the wind, my perfect tan for the ages, rock for the world to see, yes. Back then, yes. Today, not so much. Hey, Jim, say hi, cement.
Say hi, accent.
Say hi, cement.
Say hi, accent.
Hey, Jim, say hi, cement.
Say hi, accent.
Say hi, cement.
Say hi, accent.
Regards, Bobby Petrino's face. It's pretty good. Mike in Buffalo, one of the rare times when you're actually helping him. Say hi, cement.
Say hi, accent.
Dear Rome Skillet, turkeys. What? It's the turkeys. Signed, Miss Teen South Carolina.
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as,
and turkeys.
I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future.
Like I always say, man, she rounded third. And the third base coach was halfway between the bag and home plate, jumping up and down, both hands in the air. Stop, stop, stop. When they rang that bell, she ran right through it. Because she had lots of other things she wanted to add, like such as, therefore, consequently, subsequently, turkeys.
And turkeys.
Vic in NoCal is in. Quote, high accent, I'm chlorophyll. Signed, Paul Pierce.
Say hi, accent.
Chlorophyll.
I see you working, Vic. Hey, Rome, just one question regarding the Paul Pierce video. How the hell does one get in that game? Talk about easy money. Tommy from NC. It's a good point. It's a good point. Jimmy, you want the truth? You can't handle the truth. Regards, Instagram Live.
You can't handle the truth.
Well done. Chris in Milwaukee, and I need a lady clone in on this, and not just any lady clone, but this one. Romy, Back the hell off, Pierce. Dude had a bad night. Happens to us all. Regards, Broadway Joe.
Joe, it's been a tough season for Jet fans. What does it mean to you now when the team is struggling?
I want to kiss you. I couldn't care less about the team struggling. What we know is we can improve. Chad missed. Chad Pennington, our quarterback, missed the first part of the season. And we struggled.
Yeah, we get it, Alvin. Ashley in Nebraska sent that. Everybody has it. Poor lady clones. Everybody has a bad night. Me, you, Broadway Joe. Come on. Let it go already, man. You're lucky he even performs for you bastards. Leave Joe alone, Ashley.
You're lucky she even performs for lady you clone. Bastards.
Happens to us all.
Leave
Joe
me
alone.
Yeah.
When we return, Tim Connolly joins me. Stay tuned. He is the president of basketball ops for the Denver Nuggets. Are you looking for professional level protection for your car's paint, but without the cost you'd pay a professional detailer? New revolutionary 303 graphene nano spray coating provides just that. 12 months of protection with a simple mode of application. You can do it yourself in no time. It leaves your car's finish with insane levels of shine and depth. Plus, the water beading is insane. Your car will never look better. It also helps to keep your car looking that way longer, too. The layer of protection helps to repel dust, it fights off water spotting, and it does this by making water shed quickly from the surface and lowering the surface temperature, so the water does not end up drying on the paint. It's also great to use on your car's glass, wheels, and trim, too. It's now available at Advance Auto Parts and Pep Boys locations nationwide, or you can learn more by going to 303radio.com, 303radio.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. Championship Monday. All right, so we've talked at length about tonight's championship game. Let's talk some association. We are joined now by the president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets. Previously served as GM and executive VP of basketball ops. He joined the Nuggets back in 2013. Denver is red hot. They've won five straight. Detroit is at Denver tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern. And for the record, he is on record. He's a fan of softball guy because we all are. He is Tim Connolly. Tim, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Good to have you, Tim. So let's talk about where you are. You beat Orlando by 10 last night. That's five in a row, as I mentioned off the top. It's a game, though, Tim, where you're down by 18 in the first half, and then you outscore Orlando 72-44 in the second half. What's that second half say about this team in particular and how good you are?
It was encouraging. Thought we kind of sleptwalked through the first half. But our guys got frustrated with what they perceived was a kind of a tough home whistle. So it was great to see them respond. I mean, Orlando's got a heck of a coach, and those guys play hard. They came in shorthanded on a back-to-back and really outplayed us. So it was fun to see our guys answer the bell in the second half and get a big home win.
Tim Connolly joining us. Tim, Aaron Gordon had another night. He had 24.7 rebounds in the win over his old team. From the outside, Tim, it seems like he's been a perfect fit for your team. Take me back to before the trade. What did you see in him that made you think that he'd be a good addition?
Now, we needed a guy like him who had versatility on both ends, almost likened it to like a left tackle in football, a guy who protects your best player and quarterback and also helps him. And I think he both helps and protects Nikola with his defensive versatility and his ability to just play physical. He's a real man out there. So we thought he'd be a good fit. He allows us to do a lot of things defensively. He's, a really competitive guy and a guy that takes pride in his defense. So we kind of crossed our fingers, and he's been fantastic thus far.
Tim Connolly joining us. Tim, that's not a guy that you get without having to give something up, and it's not a trade that you made lightly because it meant giving up Gary Harris, RJ Hampton, and a future first-round pick. As a sign of what Harris meant to the organization, there was a digital billboard outside of Orlando's hotel with a thank you message to him. So what did he mean to the organization, and how tough was it to see him go?
aiming at the world. I mean, I certainly wouldn't still have my job. We didn't have Gary. He was our longest tenured player. He saw a complete culture shift from a team that was struggling to get the 500 to a team that can advance in the playoffs. He's the best. As good a player as he is, he's a better guy. So losing him, losing a guy like RJ Hampton, who has a chance to be a really, really good player in this league, was hard, but you got to give to get. We thought with the play of Nikola, it was time to push a little bit of the chips in the middle of the table and kind of see what how noisy we can make it this offseason. I'm sorry, this postseason. So it sucks. The whole idea of trading human beings is weird and awkward, and especially when a guy, you get to know him so well and he's done so much for the organization. But Orlando got a class act and a hell of a player.
I got to say, Tim, I know that's hard and that's not fun, and not to make light of it, but I love that answer. I thought you broke that down perfectly, man. It does suck to trade human beings, especially somebody who means that much to the team and the organization. And then you mentioned Tim Nikola. Like, I can't believe that we got this far without mentioning him or me, myself. 17 points, 16 assists, 9 rebounds last night. He broke Will Chamberlain's record for most 10 assist games by a center in his career. Like, I've run out of ways to explain or describe how great this guy is. How would you sum it up?
I think he's like an algorithm, you know, or they said Ted Williams could see the seam of a baseball. I think that's how he processes the game. He never makes a poor decision. Even his turnovers, you see where he was going with it. He's an amazing player, the best player I've ever been fortunate enough to be around. I think we're about to see a sustained level of play that this city's never seen. He's our leader. He's a fantastic guy. Everything he's accomplished is well-earned and deserved. You know, it was not a typical path to superstardom. So he's amazing. He amazes me pretty much night to night.
I had a chuckle. He is an algorithm. That's a great description. Now, he and Gordon also seem to have connected immediately. Nikola set up Gordon for a bucket 6 times last night. I would imagine that does not surprise you, but what do you make of how their chemistry has taken or gelled so quickly?
It's really cool. When I met Aaron, we were flying back to Denver from Orlando. We talked about our team and talked about how unselfish our team is, and that's a huge testament to obviously Nikola and Jamal, but also Mo and his whole staff. And I think Aaron's basketball IQ has been probably underrated a bit, and just talked about where he can be most effective. And he's meshed so quickly. It speaks to how bad he wants to win. It also speaks to, I think, a guy who really knows how to play the game. So when you have big cutters like Michael and Aaron, and you have guys who can put the ball in the hole like Will and Jamal, that starting five is really hard to stop. There's a lot of options out there.
Monte Morris made that point as well, that you got so many cutters and they get to the basket and they get easy, good looks. And then, Tim, you mentioned, or I should say, you added JaVale McGee. Now, JaVale McGee was with the team earlier in his career, and now he's back. What do you like about what he has to bring to it at this juncture of his career?
I think it's just really neat. I was with JaVale when he was a rookie in D.C. We had some ups and quite a few downs. I was with him in Denver a couple of years later. And since he left Denver, he's got 3 championship rings. He's played in 4 finals. So it's really cool from kind of a personal perspective to see a guy who's grown that much and has enjoyed that level of success. He's the only guy in our locker room with rings. So he brings, beyond the obvious physical attributes, a big-time rim protector, a lob threat, a guy who's length and cause havoc on both ends. He brings experience and knowledge of what it takes to win it all, and that's been invaluable thus far.
I love the guy, and I love that move. In terms of moves, Tim Connolly joining us, you went to the conference finals last year. I think it would have been very easy for you to say, we have a talented roster, we're more experienced for it, we're better for it, we don't need to be unnecessarily aggressive or take any chances. But like you just said, you push those chips to the center of the table. These are really aggressive moves. What made you want to take that approach?
Well, we were happy where we were last year, but not content. We thought the last couple of years, a couple of possessions here and there, maybe we could have been in the finals. But we weren't, so you have to be brutally honest. We lost a heck of a player in Jeremy Grant. He's in Detroit playing great this year. So that was a big hole on our roster, that multi-position, versatile, 4-3, 3-4. When you're trying to win at the level we're trying to win, you're going to face some just monsters. It's Giannis, it's Kawhi, Paul, LeBron. I mean, the list goes on. And without that guy, it's hard to take yourself too seriously. So that was a focus of ours. And certainly going into trade deadline, our rim protection has not been where it needs to be. and JaVale has established himself as one of the premier rim protectors. So it's easy to identify where we need to get better. It's hard to at times make deals, but we were fortunate enough that we got those two deals done, and we think we're primed to make a real run.
So, Tim, really quickly, you mentioned LeBron. When you see the sort of issues the Lakers have with injuries to their key players, is that something you take notice of, and does it feel like maybe the window cracks open a little bit wider?
I've seen LeBron, I think, since he's freshman year high school. That guy just regenerates, so I'm sure he'll be back ASAP, better than ever. But I think what's neat now is because these young guys have won enough, they believe in themselves, and you know, it's almost like you don't give the guys you see every day enough credit. Nikola's, I think, the best player in the world, and we have to treat him as such, and we have to know when you have the best player in the world, when you have one of the biggest gamers in the world like Jamal Murray, who's playing into a superstar status, and we saw he did last year in the bubble, you know, why not us? It's, you know, I think we have the talent. I think we have a fantastic coaching staff, and you know, if we don't believe, then no one else will.
Why not us? One last question about one more guy. Michael Porter Jr. is currently hitting 44.9% of his threes. I bring that up because no player in league history has hit 45% of their threes in their age 22 season. He's knocking on the door of that. He's also grown as a defender. So how high is his ceiling overall?
I think Michael could be one of the elite scorers in our league. I think he's going to be one of the best rebounding forwards we've seen in a long, long time. His defense keeps improving steadily. What's underrated about Michael is how much he cares and how hard he works. He's obsessed with basketball. I mean, just look at his family. You know, his mom was a heck of a player. His dad played collegiately at UNO down in New Orleans. So it's in his blood. You know, when you have a guy that talented who has those physical tools and he's obsessed with it, you know, I think the sky's the limit.
Nuggets look great. They've won five straight. He joined the Nuggets in 2013. He is the president of basketball operations. Tim Connolly locked in. Tim, I appreciate you. Great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for doing that.
Thanks as always, man. I appreciate it.
You too, Tim. Really appreciate you. Tim Connolly. Nuggets look great right now. I want to say about this guy, he and that front office are next level. They are so good. One of the best, in my opinion, in the entire association. I think that he is ahead of the curve. I love talking ball with him. I love the way they move their chips to the center of the table at the deadline, as I mentioned. They were in the conference finals. It would have been easy to sit back and say, you know what, we're in a good spot. We've got talent. We're better for that. We have the experience of that. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. But that's not what they did. They take an enormous swing for Aaron Gordon. And I absolutely love that move at the time, and I like it even better right now. That fit has been incredible. And what can you say about Nikola at this point? I mean, this dude, I had a chuckle when he said it. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, this guy's a unicorn. That doesn't even do it justice at this point. He is an algorithm. 17 points, 16 assists, and 9 boards. And you look at that and you think, yeah, and? That's just what this guy does. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, we are open now. And do something for the show. Actually, your reaction to the show on social has been good. Do something for the show by picking up the phone and making it better. I've got lots to get to still yet. More on the championship game. And for the record, I have not hit that thing yet. I still think that game is that close. And I'm trying to figure out which way to play that. Last look at the line had Gonzaga minus 4.5. I could do that. But man, there's so much to like about Baylor. And you're telling me I can get 4.5 points in addition to Baylor. How do you not look at that? We talked about Paul Pierce's Instagram Live on Friday night. If you want to react to that, you can. Porter Moser going to Oklahoma. Great hire by them. Jordan Spieth got himself a win on Masters Eve. Shohei Ohtani was insane this weekend. All of that is still ahead, and Ross Tucker in the final segment of the program.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Quick reminder for you, all beef jerky is not one and the same. Old Trapper is better than the rest. better for you, higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, or candy. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? All right, so quickly, some reaction. Hey, Rome, hookers, blow, poker, bulls, turkeys. That sounds like how the invitation reads for a Thanksgiving at Rodman's house. Chad in Orlando. Ryan in Sacktown is in, quote, Paul Pierce is the freaking man. Regards, college guy who still attends high school parties.
Say hi, accent.
Say hi, accent.
Say hi, accent.
So he went live with that. What do you think happened? I mean, is there any way that that was just an issue of the setting, that he meant to send that, broadcast that to just close friends only? And if that's the case, again, how does somebody not get to him and say, bro, you're shooting that out to everybody. It's not just us. Or maybe nobody wanted to roll up on him and ruin his vibe or his flow. Yeah, I don't know. You probably don't want that out there. Or maybe he did. If my man knew what he was doing and didn't give a damn, my respect just went up for him even more. I can't imagine that's good for brand, unless you want that to be your brand. I can't imagine the mouse was very happy about that. But then again, that was some of his better commentary. Anyway, we've been on that too, if that's what you want to react to. So I've said it before, I'll say it again right now. Major League Baseball lacks events, right? Because the season is so long, and because there are so many games, there aren't that many moments that are appointment television. There aren't too many things in the game of baseball that you know ahead of time, like, oh, I've got to see this. I have to be watching this. There's so FOMO with this. Shohei Ohtani is one of those things, though. Ohtani is an event. He's a walking, talking, dealing, mashing event. He's appointment television. If you don't believe me, I suggest you go back and review the first inning of last night's White Sox-Angels game. Because in the top of the first, Ohtani's on the mound. He gets the first two batters he faces out. He walks one, and then he gets a ground out to end the inning. The point is not that he worked out of that inning without giving up a hit or a run. It's that his first pitch of the game was 98.2 miles per hour. Later in the inning, he hits 100.6 miles per hour. So if you were at all concerned about whether or not he could bring the heat after having elbow surgery, you can file those concerns away. He's all good. And that was just the start, because the top of the first was only one part of the Shohei Ohtani show. Because in the bottom of the first, he then did this.
First pitch swinging.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Oh, man! Lean into it!
Here's a guy that throws a ball 101 on one half of the inning, and the next one hits the first pitch 95-plus, 450 feet.
Man, that ball was crushed.
Wow.
That was ridiculous.
I mean, that's all true, and that does not begin to do justice to it. I mean, first pitch swinging, first pitch crushing, and my man went up and he got it and he murdered it. Like, murdered the baseball. Like, holy crap. Like, an amazing thing, even for a major leaguer to see. Or an amazing thing for us to see, even from a major leaguer. I mean, did you hear the way it sounded? The sound of that bat. The sound of the ball hitting the bat. I mean, that sounded like Stapp going back into studio when he recorded Marlins Will Soar. Run that back and listen to the way this sounds.
First pitch swinging.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Oh, man! Lean into it!
I mean, if you haven't seen it, and you probably have, but if you haven't seen it, go find the video. It's an amazing thing to see, but even a more amazing thing to listen to. That sound. Man, that was a sound. That's the sound of a ball traveling 115 miles per hour. That was Ohtani doing the damn thing to that damn ball, and that ball landing 451 feet away from contact.
First pitch swinging.
So as a mini recap, this guy throws a pitch just a shade under 101 miles per hour in the top half of the inning, and then homers at 115 miles per hour in the bottom half. Leave aside the fact that he punished that ball the way he did. Put that aside for a minute. He made history the moment he stepped into the batter's box. That was the first time since 1903 that a pitcher was hitting in the number two spot in the lineup. Remember how mind-blowing it used to be when a manager had, like, the gonad to bat the pitcher eighth? Like, oh, no, he didn't. Look at Tony La Russa. Look at what they're doing. Who is this guy, Babe Ruth? You're going to bat your pitcher eighth? This dude's in the two-hole, committing murder on the baseball with a bat. You know how insane that is? Let me put it to you another way. Do you know how many people in the history of baseball can do that? Better yet, do you know how many people in the history of the planet can do that? Because I know how many people have actually done that. One, the classic multi-tool player. You know, the guy who can run it up there at 100 miles per and then hit it 115 miles per and hammer it 451 feet. I never thought that I would say this. I never thought that I would say there's a player in baseball more versatile and more dominant than Mike Trout. But Mike Trout might not even be the most electric and dominant player on his own team right now. That's how fired up I am for Ohtani and his game, and especially coming back from that injury. I mean, even this guy's outs are exciting. He had a line drive in the second inning, a line drive out that was nearly 110 miles per hour. That was the hardest hit ball of the night, aside from that bomb. So the guy crushes baseballs when he's not throwing them. And yes, I know that he walked five guys last night as part of a 7-strikeout performance, but I don't care. I mean, I really don't. This guy could walk 15 guys per game. If he's striking out fools the way he does, crushing pitches the way he does, I'm going to be glued to my TV every single time this guy plays. I love everything about the guy. And I got to admit, I love everything about the guy, so I was sort of tripping when this happened in the fifth inning.
The next 3-2. He got him! Stassi's got to finish with the throw to first base, and it's mishandled. Fletcher throws home. That's wide. Ohtani goes down at the plate. The White Sox score, but of much greater import is the health of Shohei Ohtani. Both runs have come in to score. The White Sox tie it in rather bizarre means.
Uh-oh does not begin to do justice to that. I mean, I don't know what freaked me out more. Seeing the catcher drop a third strike that would have ended that inning, or seeing that wild throw down to first that created the play at the plate that resulted in Ohtani getting taken out at the ankles. How terrified do you think the Angels were when they saw their guy get clipped at home plate? How shocked do you think Joe Maddon was? I mean, this dude must have been throwing up all over himself seeing Ohtani rolling around on the ground. Imagine giving everything this guy's come back from and seeing what he did in those five innings. Imagine seeing this guy start his season by getting his ankle tendon shredded. But he said after the game that he was okay, which was an enormous relief. I mean, you got to protect this cat at all costs. Baseball needs this guy in the field as much as possible in the worst way. We all do, because that's the guy you pay to see. That's the guy you drop everything you're doing to watch pitch and swing it. There has never been a guy like that before. So the last thing we need is that guy leaving his tendons on the field, especially on a third strike that gets away from the catcher. Scud dodged, I hope. Hell, I need this guy in the field as much as possible in the worst way. That's how good he is. That's how exciting he is. And if that's what he's doing in his first start of the season, I can't wait to see what this guy does the rest of the way.
First pitch swinging.
Oh, and first pitch crushing!
It's so awesome the way this guy turns on that pitch. And he went up and got it and reversed it. And then to see this guy a few innings later in the dirt, sprawled out, man, that would have been the worst. The worst. Hopefully, thankfully, it does not appear that it is. Hey, you want to make this thing better? You want to participate? You want to call the program? Go ahead and do it. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go quickly to Oregon. Evan in Oregon. The Evan in Oregon? Or another one? I don't know. Let's find out. Evan, what's going on?
Romy, what up?
What's up, dude?
Oh, I'm just tired of a few things here. I got a Twitter beef going on because I am the Evan in Oregon. I called in on beef, gave the chicken man voice because I'm introducing a five-year-old into the jungle, and he loves it when he hears the chicken man. So I threw out the babak, but yes, I did have beef. Anyways, NBA, come on, man. Get your jerseys together. Houston in red and blue, Miami in pink, Lakers in blue. I don't know, y'all. I can't watch it. It's terrible. Other than that, I am the true Evan in Oregon. I live in a town of 1,000 or less, no stoplights. I'm doing the best I can in Oregon, and best off, there's no Portland woman. And finally, Rome, I just want to say Jeff in Southfield needs to call in with another 70s recap, or maybe Rick can call in with a 30s recap of what happened on the radio that time. But anyway,
that's not a good call. No. Hey, Evan. I got something for you and your son. Not a very good call. Actually, if you want to introduce this show to your five-year-old, I'm all right with that. Because what aspect of the show could a five-year-old really identify with? Well, that. Alvin, why don't you give them a little history? Why is there a chicken man? And why are people bagaaking on the air?
Let's go to Orlando. Hi, who's this?
Romy, they call me the chicken man.
Really, why?
I have been on a bit of a healthy kick as of late, and all I do is eat chicken for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I am practically bringing these poor fowls to the brink of extinction. Not to mention the fact that the chicks love me, and I have a big rooster.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
This dude. There are some calls that hold up. And there are some calls that actually get better no matter how many times they're played. And then I got some staffers that are more clone than they are staffers. No names mentioned. James Kelly. Nobody likes Chicken Man more than James Kelly. James Kelly's like, yo, boss, I'm like 58 years old and I love Chicken Man. You know what, though? I'll tell you what. I like that the show's getting younger. I've got a 16-year-old kid from Illinois calling. I've got a five-year-old kid in Oregon listening. This is what I'm saying. Start him early. Start him young. When we return, a third and final hour, it's Championship Monday. I'm watching that line. It has not changed. Gonzaga, Baylor, Gonzaga, -4.5. Who you got? Stay tuned. Ross Tucker also next hour.